Devices Radio Network.
Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Hey, what is up, guys? Welcome back to Advices Radio. You are listening to episode number 102. I'm Scott McNally, and this program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. Our code is ADVICES, and if you use that at checkout, you'll let them know that you support what we're doing here. Plus, I've got some awesome supplements, and you'll get them for a discount with the code. I've been using the MPA Muscle Intrusion along with a scoop of Pepto-Pro. And I've been amazed because this intra-workout mix is totally clear. And it's awesome on digestion. I'm getting 25 high-quality carbs along with 25 grams of protein plus some aminos and some other jazz. And it's really been improving my workouts. Plus, I get some additional high-quality nutrition in. So I'm really happy with that, guys. And the flavor is amazing. Pepto-Pro on its own, I use the unflavored stuff, not so tasty. But I will tell you, with the lemon ice flavor that the MPA Muscle Intrusion comes in, it masks it perfectly. All right, so today we are going to speak with Kate D'Annunzio. We spoke with Kate about a year ago, and we talked to her about the topic of change. And stay with me here. This is a bodybuilding show. Yes, this does relate. And I think if you hear me out, you will agree. This is a topic that I've personally struggled with at times. I feel like I've struggled more than some other people that I've watched grow up alongside me in life. And I feel like in bodybuilding, we do a really good job with consistency. And there's no coincidence that this sport tends to attract extreme people who might just be wired to crave that consistency. There is a safety in it. At the same time, it can be a prison when you aren't embracing the life that you should be living, when you have things that you really should be changing in order to, you know, reach your goals. And I've seen it hold me back. I've seen it hold some of my clients back too. It's the people that I never have to question on the diet. The people I know that are always going to be 100%, those are the guys and the girls that this sport is made for, and they are the exact same people that I know struggle with this. So what do we do? I mean, really, I don't know. Mainly, I have fought the best that I can and somehow continue to move forward, and sometimes it isn't pretty. But the more courage and self-esteem that I can put together, the better it works out. And so I was amazed to discover that Kate D'Annunzio had created her own job title, created her own job. She is a change specialist. Her company is The Art of Progress. She helps companies and individuals embrace the tools that it takes to become resilient and better handle change. Like I said, we spoke to her about a year ago, and now she's back again to revisit the topic of change. And this time, we are going to go deeper. And seriously, listening to her has helped me through some difficult changes in my own life, which I will talk about on the show. And I am confident that her thoughts can help you too. So let me know what you guys think about this one, guys. I know I go a little bit off of the bodybuilding topics at times, but I think that We are a group of people that are multidimensional, and I think that this is going to fit some of our needs too. Outside of just like how to get jacked, you know, how to get huge as fuck. I think we need this stuff. All right, guys, I hope you enjoy the show. Looking forward to your feedback. Also, check out YouTube. We're doing new content in the video format. Another new podcast coming up with Paul Carter and Dr. Scott Stevens. So stay tuned for that. Guys, here we go. Kate D'Annunzio.
Mm-hmm.
guys. Back with me today is Kate DeNunzio from her company, The Art of Progress. We had spoke to her. It's been a year now. We talked about what she does. She is a change management specialist. And honestly, the last episode we did, it was something that really hit home with me. It helped me in a lot of ways. I thought that a year later, actually a year plus, it's been a year and 3 months now, I believe, I wanted to bring Kate back on, revisit the topic of change, and learn a little bit more about the evolutions in her thought process and in her business. So, Kate, thank you very much for being with me. I appreciate it.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Like I said, the last episode had meant a lot to me. We had talked a great deal about change, and you had this chart, and it showed the various stages of change. And we focused the last episode on breaking those different elements down. And I can tell you that at that point in my life, I had not talked to anybody about it, but I had decided that I needed to make a big change in my life if I wanted to be honest with myself and actually try to find happiness. And that unfortunately meant that I needed to go through a divorce. And it's not something that's pretty. It's not something that it's not something that's a fun part of life. And, you know, it's not something that I want to focus on a great deal talking about here. But I will say, though, that looking at just the steps of change and better understanding the steps that I needed to go through in order to achieve my goal, it gave me a great deal of understanding about the process that I was in. And it's also helped me with my understanding of many other changes that I have gone through since. So first of all, I wanted to give you a huge thank you for having shared your time with us in the last episode, and a huge thank you for coming back to do this all again. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. You know, I just, you know, Scott, I really appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, I get up and I live my purpose every single day. And, you know, helping people and sharing information is a really big piece of that. So I really appreciate that.
So to start out for anybody who doesn't remember the last episode, or maybe they weren't even listening at that time, tell me a little bit about what you do for a living.
So for me, what I do for a living is I work with organizations, individuals, athletes, families in some cases, in helping drive and sustain change. Change is kind of the one constant thing that we experience in life next to paying taxes and death. So it comes daily. We are expected to change and do things in a new way every single day. And it manifests in different ways in terms of maybe it's a dietary change, maybe it's a change at work, maybe it's a change in family circumstance, maybe it's a massive change in the workplace. But there's emotions and psychology behind that. And so I've focused a practice on helping people understand what it is they're experiencing first and foremost, and then helping them build resiliency factors around that to drive sustainable change that works for them. And, you know, it doesn't mean that they stay status quo in terms of, you know, for example, you have somebody who's working and they're not happy in their job. It doesn't mean that I make them happy in their job. It's that I guide them to coming to realizations to help them know where their next steps are going to go. And doing it in a methodical way that's not destructive. Because if we're not managing change and recognizing what's going on for us, more often than not, what you're going to find is very destructive individuals. And, you know, as we go through the conversation, I'm sure that you guys will be able to pinpoint individuals that you know or circumstances that you've been in where you have been destructive because you haven't recognized where you are in that change curve.
Something that really stood out to me too was a term you just mentioned, and it's something that we talked about last time, and that is resiliency. I've looked at it since we spoke last in my clients, the people that I work with in nutrition, and the people that are the most successful are the people that are able to be resilient, that can embrace change. It's interesting because in bodybuilding, so much of what we do is focused on not changing, on being repetitive, on doing the same thing, about putting our nose to the grindstone and working nonstop, without change, continuously for a long period of time, and not allowing ourselves the freedom to do something else. It can, at the same time, though, it can paint us into a corner. I've seen it happen in my own life. I've seen it happen in many clients. And now that I can see what resiliency is and the effect that it has on our ability to actually embrace and evolve, I could see just how important that is. Can you talk a little bit about resiliency to start? Because I think that's one of the most positive assets that we can have when it comes to embracing change and being open-minded.
Absolutely. You know, so change is it's a catalyst in our world. And what it does is it tests how resilient you are. And, you know, taking it back to, say, a client who is a nutrition client, you'll often see that somebody will get stuck in the change curve, right? And they get stuck in the change curve. They come in through, you know, a change being instigated at the beginning of a week. And then it comes down into the bottom of that curve into the hang and bargaining point. And they stay there, because of the fact that they don't have the factors to get them through the other side. I often say, and I think I mentioned this in our last podcast, that for me personally, when I'm dieting, if I can't get on board with a change, so I check in on Mondays. Mm-hmm. If I can't get on board with a change by Tuesday morning, I'm probably not going to have a successful week. Because I need to have, because you need to have that quick turnaround and that quick go about, right? And so when you talk about resiliency is four things. It's problem solving, empathy, emotional regulation, and self-confidence. And within those four things, those are the drivers and of being able to get through change. And to be able to kind of experience, understand where you are, and be able to drive forward, even if sometimes it seems uncertain, right? So if you look at problem solving, just as a very quick kind of overview, it's sure. Four simple steps, right? It's four steps. It's understanding the real problem. It's brainstorming and coming up with strategies and ideas. It's testing them out. And then it's looking back and saying, okay, did they actually work? And where I find a lot of people break down in their critical thinking is at the first phase, because a lot of times, you know, you'll find people who like to talk about topics but not issues. Right. And so if we're going to scratch the surface and only talk about a topic, we're never going to get to the root cause of the problem. And if we never get to the root cause of a problem, then you're never actually going to problem solve. You're just going to evolve in that problem, and it's just going to get bigger, or it's never going to go away. Yeah. So from that point, you go into empathy, and empathy is a very misunderstood little character. I facilitate a lot of workshops on the resilient leader in the workplace, and I've actually started to bring, I taught myself how to play Kumbaya on a ukulele in the past year, and it really, really messes with executives. It makes them grossly uncomfortable when I turn around and I've got this little ukulele and I start playing Kumbaya. They're like, what is going on? Right?
Yeah.
Like, I had a guy once who, if he could have turned inside out and into stardust and vanished, he would have.
That's amazing. I can only picture this now.
It's super awesome. And I'll travel with it to like other states and provinces. It's very awkward. But with empathy, people think that it's kumbaya and it's this fuzzy, you know, everybody's going to get a kitten and a hug. And actually, you know, when it comes down to empathy is the most, in my opinion, most important part of emotional intelligence, because it allows you to see things that normal people don't see. Somebody who doesn't have developed or well-developed empathy is incapable of seeing or putting themselves in somebody else's shoes, or seeing a power dynamic, or seeing the shadow of a problem that somebody might not be willing to talk about. So to put this in the context of a coach, you know, as a coach, if you're just receiving information constantly and just pumping check-ins out for 4 or 5 hours a day, and you're not investing the time into the relationship to truly understand what's going on for people, mm-hmm. your clients likely aren't going to be as successful as they could be.
Yeah.
You know, because you're not taking the time to truly understand what's going on for them.
Yeah, I can understand that. At least on certain levels, I could see how it does work for some coaches in some relationships. Some people want that. But yeah, there's a lot of cases where people are going to need that a little bit more. And I'm not going to say hand-holding, but a little bit more of a personalized feel to what they're getting from their coach.
Absolutely. I'm one of those people. I like to have a relationship with the person that I am working with, that I choose to work with. I worked with the same coach for 4 years. So last year, I went through a huge change, leaving a coach who had developed me to where I was over a 4-year span. We had a very, very comfortable, very safe, happy, very nurturing, loving relationship. And I made a transition. And not only through that transition did I change coaches, but I also changed my whole mindset and training methodology. And that was very hard, right? I moved into I moved into doing full-time fortitude training, and that was an enormous, enormous change for me.
I bet.
Enormous, because you think of going from a, you know, 5 or 6 day a week training to 4 days,
yeah,
right? That will mess with you, because you're now sitting here on those 3 days going, well, what do I do with myself? Right. And so that's where you have to start to go into your problem solving. Why am I feeling this way? Well, okay, because I'm used to doing this. Now I have the ability to sleep late or work late or go out and go for a walk with somebody that I haven't seen in a long time, because I've been so head down, nose to the grindstone for the past 4 years. Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you work with Dr. Scott Stevenson, right?
I do. So, yeah. Yeah. Nice. So, yeah. So it's, you know, those are the types of things where, you know, you need to make sure that you have the right level of empathy for the right individual, because not everybody wants that deep relationship. They just want you to give them guidance and send them on their way.
Sure,
right.
Sure.
You know, so from there, it's emotional regulation, and emotional regulation is a really, really interesting cat, because what it comes down to is the ability to give and receive feedback. Predominantly, like, that's a really big piece of it, because that's where a lot of our emotional responses come from. We learn something or we hear something, and when that comes in, the way that communication is, I say something to you, you understand it, you receive that message, understand it, and you respond back in some way. How you choose to respond back is the emotional regulation, right? And so it's not just, it's knowing when to be positive, it's knowing when to be negative, it's knowing how to be positive, how to be negative, it's knowing how to reconcile the emotion that you're feeling, and how to display that, or whether you should display it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
This is where things like stoicism become really important. Like, if you're leveraging this in a coaching relationship, or if you're leveraging this in a business or professional area, knowing to kind of keep that poker face on and internalize appropriately. And I often, I have an equation that I like. It's my favorite equation, and it's E plus R equals O. So the event plus your reaction equals the outcome. And so we predict our own future because of how we choose to react or engage with other people. And I call it the stone throw. We either get a ripple, a wave, or a tsunami based off of our reactions. And we have to then accordingly deal with that. And then the very last factor is self-confidence. And self-confidence is a beast, because if you know, empathy is kind of the foundation. Self-confidence is the one that is kind of like the two-year-old walking through, kicking over your block tower. If you are not self-confident, you're going to struggle with all three of the other pillars of resiliency. And so in that case, what happens is, you know, you'll see it often is somebody will check in, and I've had this happen in my past, where I'll go and I'll check in and I'll feel really good about what I've just checked in. And, yeah, you know, I get a response that I wasn't expecting, and it's like, oh, okay, I'm not on track. Right. And, you know, particularly in the past, like in my previous coaching relationship, I would pull in a bunch of data and feed this big giant data sheet of information.
Yeah.
And I would get 4 lines back, and I'd be like, okay, so I just invested how much of my time to pull this check-in together or track all these metrics, and I'm not getting what I want or what I think I should have. Well, wait a minute. I'm not going to make it. Things are going to fall apart. I'm not going to look great on stage, you know? And so you start to have these negative feelings about what it is that you're capable of. And so in self-confident people are people who generally have good relationships with family and friends, colleagues, folks at the gym. Like, you know, you often hear that the bully is a bully because they lack confidence. And
absolutely,
that's not wrong.
Yeah.
It's not wrong. It's because I'm trying to prop something up about myself. I'm trying to give myself something to stand on, right? And I see this quite frequently, like when I look at the gym situation, you know, it's kind of like, focus on your own work. Why are you looking at what somebody else is doing? Every gym has gym fuckery. But just
right.
Why does it matter to you what that kid is doing on the lat pull down?
Yeah.
How does it impact you, right? But again, it's I'm not confident in what I'm doing, or I need to build myself up in a different way, right? And so that's when you get people who are recording people in the gym and, you know, doing nonsense like that, right?
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, in terms of bodybuilding, where it's very interesting, and I'll get a little vulnerable in this case. You know, last year I competed and I was feeling very confident because I had my best prep. But just because I had my best prep didn't mean that I was going to be the best on stage. You don't know who's going to show up.
Absolutely.
And that was, it was really devastating to me. I ended up taking a second place in a competition that I still feel like I should not have. Mm. I was awarded the, the most inspirational journey, which I've equated, or I had equated to kind of Miss Congeniality. You have a really great personality, but you're kind of ugly, right? Is kind of how I took it. And so I was just like, I felt really like I had been robbed of that season. And I was talking to my best friend this week, actually just yesterday. And I said to him, you know, I feel like for the first time since last May, I'm not grieving the loss of my season.
Hmm. Interesting.
Right. Yeah. And that is, it's been evolutionary. And these are just kind of thoughts that you have as you're journaling or you're blogging or you're training and you're grinding through, like, because under the Fortitude system, obviously, when I first came into it, it was very hard on me because of the fact that I felt like I wasn't executing right. And then it turns out I wasn't executing right. And, you know, I get course corrected. It's complex, right? Like there's nuances to it that you have to pay attention to if you truly want to get the benefit of it.
Yeah.
And so I went through these vortexes of self-confidence and trying to grow and move. And I feel like I'm finally coming up on my own, but I'm very cautious in terms of how I display that. And so it's very interesting to be able to relate it back and see how it plays out in your own world, because I'm a really big fan of practice what you preach, yeah. Right? It's, you know, and so I'm always applying my own practice to myself. And I look at the results I've had over the past 10 years of doing this and being methodical with my life and living my truth, not just talking about it, but living my truth. And my evolution has been substantial.
Yeah. It self-confidence, it's an interesting thing. I've been trying to pay attention to my own level of that in the last year or so, especially. And it's something I see, it's always changing. There's always an evolution of how confident I feel, that I may feel like I'm on a high for, you know, 3-4 weeks, and then all of a sudden it all comes crashing down. Nothing's changed. My environment is exactly the same. What I'm doing is the same. Things are still appearing to be just as successful as they were before. But all of a sudden it'll take a dive. And I haven't quite been able to figure that out completely. But what I have noticed is the less that I focus on validating myself through say what other people think, for instance, the better I can maintain, kind of like an even keel of self-confidence.
Absolutely. And I said this to Scott, I think a couple of weeks ago in one of my check-ins, and I think it's a very, very relevant. Validation is for parking.
Hmm.
Right. When you wake up in the morning to get up and say, I'm the best at X, right? I mean, I wake up every day and I'm like, oh, damn, I am the best at what I do. Nobody does it the way I do. Nobody does advices the way you do. Nobody does advices, right? And so it's that you hang your hat on. And as you move forward, when those crashes come and go, it's what I honestly and consistently remind myself and my clients of is that, you know, you work in a multidisciplinary kind of, say, cross-functional team at work. And somebody is really, really good at a technical skill, and you're not.
Yeah.
It's not your job. That's not why they hired you.
Yeah.
Right? And I say that to myself quite frequently. I work with some really high caliber people who are like engineers, you know, MBAs, like all the, like they have so many letters behind their names. I'm like, it's alphabet soup. I'm not like that. I don't want to be like that. And so I look at that and I go, wow, they're so good at things like project management. And man, I could totally be better at that, but I'm not passionate about it. So if I'm not passionate about it, I don't want to do that. I'm really good at what I do. And those guys wouldn't be successful without me. I'm a cog in the wheel that makes them successful. And if I went away, they'd maybe have a flat tire for a while.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's, what do you bring to the table? And that's one of the things, like I'll do a workshop and I have this icebreaker for this particular piece that I pass around, a roll of toilet paper.
Okay.
And I just say to people, you know, take as much as you think you need. And people will be like, well, what's it for? Well, first off, it's a problem that you think I need to explain myself to you. Just take as much as you think you need.
Hmm.
And so people become very, very uncomfortable with this because the uncertainty is like, what's this lady going to do now? She's
right.
Already played a ukulele and made us super uncomfortable. So, you know, you get the people who will take one. And then you get the class clowns who take 16. Yeah. And then you have people, the average group probably takes about 3 or 4, sometimes 5. And what I do is I say, okay, great. So for every square you've taken, you have to tell the group or the room one thing that's good about you.
Hmm.
It would shock you. It would absolutely shock you how executives, C-suites, leadership teams, individual contributors, the average individual cannot publicly say what's good about themselves.
Wow. Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's interesting because just thinking about that myself, I could probably think of several things just off the top of my head that I could say about you, but turning that to myself, it would become a much more difficult task.
Why?
I don't know. Why is that? There's something in there. It's somehow tied to humility, but it's not healthy. So I guess it's not being humble. I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, I think we've been programmed, and I think particularly it depends on where you're from. You've been programmed that it's not acceptable to talk or promote yourself.
Hmm.
And I disagree with that. I think that if you're doing it appropriately and it's within the confines of what you actually can do, it's fabulous, right? You know, I often say, like, I'll stand at the front of the room and I'll say to these people, I am the best at what I do. And you people know that, right? And number two, I am a friggin' awesome mom. If you ever met my kid, not only is she very healthy, tall, athletic, she will tell you, I am super awesome, right? And there's nothing wrong with me saying that. Nothing at all.
Yeah.
Because tell me I'm not.
Yeah.
Right. And it's, I think what it is it becomes personal, and it really, what it also does is it puts everybody on a level playing field of discomfort. I've never had somebody who's actually stood up and had a huge, huge chest banging ego session. Even the most egotistical or the loudest person in the room struggles with saying the things that are really, really good about themselves, although they would have no problem telling me what's really wrong with their organization.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah.
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 It's human nature.
I could relate to that. So just to kind of recap where we are so far, you were talking about resiliency and the aspects of that being problem solving, empathy, emotional regulation, and self-confidence. Something I feel like in order to plug in with those four elements, you need to have a good deal of mindfulness in order to have emotional regulation and understand, well, maybe I don't want to respond to that comment on social media. It's going to possibly take some restraint. You're going to have to be able to step outside of the emotion that you're actually feeling and kind of almost look at it from a bird's eye perspective and then make your decision as to how you're going to respond. Can you talk about developing that level of self-awareness? Because I think this is a huge element.
It really is. And, you know, when I think of the first starting of emotional regulation, it really is the pause button. It's hitting the pause button and it's saying, what hill am I willing to die on? Right. And this comes back to now your value system. Right. What do you value in your life and what drives you? Right. So if you look at my value system, for example, purpose, discipline, quality, attitude, success. If I have the first four, I always get the fifth. Right. And so then it comes back to, what is the perception that I want people to have of me? Is it that I'm a bulldog? I can be a bulldog, but I don't need to be an asshole to be a bulldog. Right. And so it ties into kind of your brand. Who are you? Right. Who are you at your absolute core? And what is it that you're trying to achieve? What hill are you willing to die on? Right. And so the thing that I often think of is also, you know, I hold myself to a very high standard of integrity. And that's just me personally. I look at things sometimes and I go, like, I can't imagine why somebody would load someone else's gun with bullets, right? Because every time you put a negative response out there, what happens is people feed on that and they pull it in. And you just generate a culture of negativity. And it's like, okay, so is that really what you want? And is it what you want to be known for? And then further to that, I think, and we hear this across the Advices podcast quite frequently, time is the only thing we cannot get back. So why would you give somebody your time, your precious time, over something that is really, in the grand scheme of things, not relevant, right? Now, if you were to take it away from something like social media, for example, which is for most people almost a hobby, right? It's what they choose to spend their time on, and you put it into the workplace, or you put it into a coaching relationship and how you receive feedback on a routine basis, this is where it becomes how you choose to move forward and how you choose to cope, I guess is really a great way of putting it.
Okay.
You know, I look at somebody, for example, receiving feedback from a coach where, you know, they were expecting to maybe have an increase in food or a cheap meal, right? Yeah. I think that's a really, you know, people get really emotional about their food when they're in the depths of prep, right?
Absolutely.
And rightfully so. I mean, that's what's important in the moment. But it's like, okay, hit the pause button. What are the benefits and what are the concerns, right? So why didn't you get the cheat meal this week? Well, I didn't get it because maybe you didn't have the right level of fat loss. Why didn't I get the right level of fat loss? Well, okay, so now we've gone from emotional regulation into problem solving, yeah. right? And so like they bleed back and forth across each other very quickly. But then it comes down into actually solving the actual problem and reconciling with the decision and then choosing to move forward with the week. So if you were to even just step back, how do I get to that point? Well, stop. Just stop. I'm a really big proponent of a deep breathing type of exercise, particularly if someone has really upset you. You need to just open those airways up. You need to give your brain a little bit of extra oxygen, and you need to stop the fight or flight responses. Because when you get triggered like that, regardless of what it is or how it happens, whether it's your children, whether it's your boss, whether it's your coach, whatever it is, someone on social media, that trigger, it nigs something right up in the brain. And so when I started to really work within the resiliency factors, I started to really do a lot of neurological study of the brain and looking at the neurotransmitters and the things that our body releases naturally under those stressors. And you automatically start to see a cortisol response, right? And as you see that cortisol response, a whole host of other things start to happen physiologically. And so by stopping that response and closing it off, you start to give the brain the opportunity to stop releasing those things, to start to increase those positive things coming in through like a deep breathing, right? It stops responses. And so pausing is the number one thing.
Okay. Stop. Okay. So here, I got a challenge for everybody, because here's the thing. We're all going to come up probably even this week, something is going to happen where you could say to yourself, let's hit the pause button. Kate, what can you explain to us just a little bit about what you mean by deep breathing? Because I want to challenge everybody at home that's listening to this, that when that moment comes up, I want you to give this a try. And then let me know, too, how it went. I feel like with this kind of stuff, it can take practice, and that each time you look at these things as an opportunity to practice your mindfulness, then you can get better at it. But let's give this a try, Kate. What should people be doing with deep breathing?
So with deep breathing, when I am at my absolute worst, or if I have a high degree of anxiety, I have a very high stress job. It's 5 breaths, right? So to the count of 5 in through the nose and the count of 5 out through the mouth. If you have really great lung capacity, go to 10, okay. Right? And what it does is it really stops you, and it you have to focus on it. Right? Because you're internally, you're counting, right? And then you're externally, you're counting. And you're thinking about the fact that maybe you didn't take enough air in the first shot and you need to adjust, right? Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, it really changes your train of thought. So yeah, 5 in, 5 out, do that 5 times. And it will recenter you to a point where you can actually be logical.
All right. Everybody at home, that's my challenge for this week. Give that a try. Breathing is such an interesting thing. I noticed I've been paying attention to what my body does at different points of the day. When I'm training and I'm getting keyed up on my really good workouts, the workouts where I feel 100% plugged in, I notice that I'm doing the opposite. I start taking shorter breaths, shallow breaths. And as I do that, I can feel my anxiety building. I can feel my heart starting to move faster. I can feel myself getting keyed up because I'm about to do something that's probably going to be the most physically intense thing I do for the entire day. It's about to happen now. But yeah, I could see definitely in how that could be negative in another situation when I'm driving and traffic is dense. If I start breathing like that because I'm not paying attention, I'm going to get an effect that I don't want. And it's definitely not going to help my experience. And guess what? It's probably going to take me just as long to get where I'm going, whether I practice this deep breathing or whether I keep these slow or these fast, shallow breaths, you know, going.
Absolutely. And you actually see that when you watch like videos of the guys, the big boys training, right? Or big power lifters about to go in for the big lift. Mm-hmm. It is. It's that pump up, right? For me, yeah. I'm only doing it because I'm trying to keep the butterflies in my stomach so I don't throw up. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I want to, before we end this, I want to go back and talk about the change curve one more time so that we can possibly paint those things out for the listeners the way we did a year ago and the way that had given me a lot of insight into my own change. But before that, could we talk a little bit more about the destructive tendencies you mentioned that people can come up against when they're trying to evoke change?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, when people want to see a rapid change, what tends to happen is people just say, okay, I'm going to change and I'm going to go and I'm going to do it, right? Yeah. And they don't take into consideration the different steps of change, and they don't take into consideration the other people who are going to be impacted by their change, right? And when I facilitate this type of conversation, one of the things that I do is I talk about losing clients, losing patients with people who matter to you. And in my case, you know, Scott, to be completely honest, when I started my journey down the path to a healthier individual, because I used to be very big, I was 260 pounds at my peak.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was a big girl. And, you know, I lost a marriage because of the fact that I changed very quickly and I chose not to bring my ex-husband along that journey with me. And so what happens is we go and we do just what's right for us, and we instigate a change and we just start walking down a path that, for all intents and purposes, is maybe the right path for us, but it's not doing it the right way. So when you're managing change, you're looking around and you're saying, okay, well, who am I impacting by making these decisions, right? Am I impacting a partner? Am I impacting my children? Am I impacting my ability to do my job effectively, right? Which then bleeds over into strategies like time management, right? So what'll happen is you'll get somebody who will be like, I'm going to do a competition, right? And we see this on social media constantly, where somebody chooses to do a contest and they don't adjust or they don't start to manage time, right? So they don't take into consideration some of the tools that they have at their fingertips to be able to be successful. Okay. So you have destructive behaviors where you get people who are getting up at 5 a.m. or 4 a.m. to do cardio, or maybe they're not getting up and they're not doing their cardio because I just can't fit it into my day. And so that becomes an internal destructive behavior. And then what happens is you start to see it reflecting poorly on a coach because they start to fib, or they aren't truly adhering to their program, or they're not eating their diet the way that they should be, right? So you see all of these different internal behaviors that start to manifest and come out in really negative ways. You start to see relationships break down. And, you know, I mean, we see this in industry all the time where you have families who start to fall apart because of the fact that you have partners that don't understand or are not supportive of the journey to the stage, right? Yeah, and that comes down to the fact that you have people who are culturally straddling a line, one of kind of the real world and the second one of the bodybuilding world, which is a little different, right? If you're truly going to commit to the lifestyle. So those behaviors, they become very destructive because they can destroy families, they can destroy a person, they can destroy their credibility, people can lose careers. If you translate that over into the workforce, you see people who behave badly because they feel they have the license to buck back at a system at work that might be changing because they don't fully understand what the change is. And they don't feel obligated to go out and learn why, right? And I think in change, and, you know, depending on what your resiliency factors are, in change, I think we as the individual own the outcome always. If you don't like what's happening in your life, change it. Don't live something that doesn't serve you. Go out and be the person you want to be. Like, listen, I wake up every single day and I do whatever the fuck I want. And you know why? Because I want to.
Yeah.
And I don't live in the establishment. The establishment doesn't tell me what to do, right? And I'm not breaking any laws doing that.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, arguably, Scott, I could suggest that you've done the same thing by breaking the mold of, you know, going from your past life into living what it is that you're passionate about.
Absolutely. Right? And I could not be happier, too. It's been, it was the best decision I've ever made.
But no doubt a bumpy road.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? But the thing is like, I don't know about you. I don't want a flatline for my story. Right? So when I kick it, I just want to have an open mic, and I don't want one single person being able to tell my eulogy. I need a revolving door. Mm. Right. And you have to be purpose driven in your everyday. Live the life that you want, not the one that somebody tells you you have to.
Yeah, I agree. I used to say when I was a kid, I wanted to live a life worth writing a book about by the end.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. So I'm still, of course, I'm still evolving. I'm still changing. There's some things that I want to work on right now. Can you refresh my memory about the change curve? Can we talk about that as our final topic here? And then I want to hear more about your business and how to contact you and so everybody can reach out to and possibly work with you if they feel that they could use your help, which I think a lot of us can. Before we get to that, this change curve, it meant so much to me last time we broke it down, and I feel that it could be very beneficial to me and everyone else to do that again.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the change curve, it's a psychological response to change. Before we dive in, it's just worthwhile noting that nobody can skip a step on the change curve. You will feel it. Depending on how resilient you are, you might glean right over it and you might just tick right past. The other thing that's worth noting is that you can regress. You can come up the curve and you can come back. It's ugly when that happens. And the last piece is that it's iterative. It will happen again and again and again. And so just knowing it is such a value add. So what happens is a change is instigated. So you start, something happens to you. So if we just take it to a very basic level of I go and I do my check-in to you, you receive my check-in, you take 40 grams of carbs away from me. Well, now I'm in shock and loss, right? I feel like, I've lost something. I'm surprised. I mean, maybe I was expecting it, but that's really upsetting to me because I'm really hungry on the daily even now, Then we come down into anger. And anger is one of those spots on the change curve that people really like. I really like it. Anger is fabulous because you can see it. And as a coach, it's super important that if you have the right degrees of empathy and connection with your clients, you see the anger, right? Particularly if you deliver your feedback to them and expect a response back, right? Mm. And that's one of the things that I recommend for coaches is that if you truly want to understand how your clients respond and how they adhere to your program, don't just punch a program change out to them and don't expect expect radio silence. If you're not getting something back, you can't gauge where they are on the change curve or how committed they are to what you're asking them to do.
Absolutely.
And so in that anger phase, people write mean emails, they get on social media and they snotagram and they do all of these different things that are just unproductive.
Snotagram. So, I never heard of that one before.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah. It's a good one. There's a lot of those. So what happens is people sit and they spin there because it feels good to just be spitting vitriol out to the universe. I'm mad and you should know about it. Mm. But once something happens, maybe somebody says to them, hey, tap the brakes. Maybe they start to maybe think about it. They come into the bottom of the curve and they just kind of hang in there. And it's just like the hang in bargaining. Some people get depressed and they sit there. They don't get out of bed. I'm not going to do my cardio. I see this quite often. When I see somebody who's in a low on social media, it's very, very evident to me. I can spot anger and hang-in like at the snap of a finger. And so my instant response when I see that, and I'm very, very forward, is I punch the change curve into their direct messages. I don't slide into anybody's DMs. I punch it into there. And it's like, you need to see this. Because if it's somebody who you really respect or you value or you think is like a really great athlete, you want to give them the mental capacity to drive through the bottom of this. There is hope. And I know you know that, but look at this. This is psychology.
Yeah.
Go to the next level. Move forward, right? And so I do this. Like, I've sent this to some pretty big IFBB pros because I can see them like languishing on social media. And I'll be like, what are you doing? First off, this is destroying your brand. Secondly, oh my God, let's get you out of this, right?
That's badass. That's so cool that you can just go around, float around and help people like that.
You know, and some of them are really responsive to it. And then there are others who are like, yeah, bitch, like get out of my DMs, right? And it's totally fine. Like, I don't take offense to it because it's not about me. Yeah. It's about where they are in the curve. And so recognizing that, I mean, they get hundreds of DMs a day, right? And so it's like, hey, you know, I just want to give you some information. And I say to them, there's no obligation to talk to me. None. Just take this into consideration and use it to help yourself, right? Yeah. And, you know, so from there, what happens is if you are tuned in to your folks and you're watching social media, and I don't think, you know, coaches need to sit there and watch social media to see how their athletes are doing. But I mean, a lot of people have congenial relationships and you can kind of see it and you can see the dial turning for those individuals. And they're either going to stay in that depression spot, that low hanging bargaining point until next check-in, or they're not. Early engagement is uncomfortable. I hate it. I'll take anger over early engagement any day, because as a practitioner, what happens is people come back and they'll say, well, you didn't cross your T and dot your I. And well, what about this? And they start maybe asking really foolish questions, or what feel foolish. And what that really is it's just an individual who's trying to own the change. Hmm. Right. And so it feels almost critical in some cases. And it can be uncomfortable for the individual as well, because in some cases, that's where the levels of humility come in, right? Where, oh boy, and you start to maybe see an erosion of self-confidence in some case, because what happens is, oh, I don't actually know absolutely everything. I should have had those 40 grams of my cheat meal taken away this week. That makes sense, right? Yeah. And then they get into that bubble and they start to move forward. And once they get into a level of buy-in, they start to execute the plan fully on track, moving forward, and they're happy as a lark. All of a sudden, you see the sunrise on their story. And they're just ticking along, right? And
then I felt that in my own life.
Absolutely. And when that happens, those breakthrough moments are absolutely the best thing that you can actually feel. Like, they just feel amazing. Yeah. And then, of course, you come into buy-in, and buy-in is like, okay, and like, you know, I'm just going to do this because I know that this is the best thing, right? And so it's interesting because, you know, this process, it seems long, but as a competitor, as an athlete, one needs to go through it very rapidly. Mm. Like I said, I generally check in with Scott on Monday morning between 6 and 10 my time, mm-hmm. and I'm 2 hours behind him. And he feeds back to me within his schedule. Sometimes I miss him and he gets to me later in the evening, which is fine. I mean, he and I have a really great relationship and, you know, we don't make a lot of changes. We're off season. I'm just eating right now. And, you know, but the next day it's consuming and taking in the feedback and then it's internalizing it. I'm a big fan of taking the time, thinking about my response before just hammering one out. And oftentimes I'll actually sit and reflect on it for a good couple of hours sometimes, depending on what the feedback is, right? And then provide that feedback back to Scott. And so he knows where I'm at and how I'm feeling. And maybe I've answered questions because, you know, Scott's a very inquisitive individual. And so he responds with a lot of questions like, what about this? What about that? I'm not clear on that, right? And so I provide that back and we have an ongoing dialogue. So he sees into the window of how I'm feeling immediately. If I don't actually come over and get out of that bottom part of the curve by, like, I think probably mid morning on Tuesday, I'm probably not going to have a really great week, or I'm going to struggle to get to where I need to get to. And so this is so important, and it's so important for coaches to really understand and know what it looks like, sounds like, feels like, to be able to level up and give their clients that best bet in terms of being an athlete. Knowing how to drive yourself through this and knowing when to ask for help is super, super important.
Yeah, that's awesome. And once again, like we did last time, I'm going to, we'll try to post the actual visual change curve itself, either in the show notes or it'll be on the social media posts. So guys, take a look, because just looking at it, seeing it for yourself, it really does help to solidify where you're at. And it helped me personally in my life and in some really big instances be able to give me the vision to drive forward. So I think it could be really helpful. This has been some great stuff, Kate. I really appreciate you taking all this time to talk with us. And I hope that others, the people listening, can take this stuff and apply it to not only their bodybuilding, but their whole lives.
Yeah, and that's really the hope, is that, you know, this is it crosses the boundaries of everything that we know every day. Right. Yeah. And it gives us the ability to truly live a very good and healthy life.
Yeah, absolutely. So if people do want to reach out to you, what's the best way?
Mm-hmm. So, social media on Instagram is usually the best way for me. So I'm at Kate, K-A-I-T underscore D, D-E-E. And one of the things that I just wanted to mention, and I think I've mentioned it to you prior to us talking, is that I'm piloting a program for coaches specifically on this to be able to pull in some of my other intellectual property to tie it all together to have kind of a level up type of a coaching attitude with people to really, to really put this in place. So I'm in pilot right now, probably looking to maybe work with one more coach. I'm working with two females right now, pretty exciting stuff that we're uncovering in terms of creating more capacity for them to have really successful clients.
That's so cool. That'll be such a, you know, because we oftentimes, I think we focus on the actual skill of dieting somebody. But it does go so much further than that. And being able to, like you said, being able to understand somebody on a deeper level and how they're responding, it does mean so much, and it makes it so much easier to be able to help somebody. I think you're really onto something. I don't know of anybody else that's doing anything like this.
No. And you know what, to be completely honest, you look at it from a health and wellness perspective in terms of how to make sure that you have the healthiest clients in a holistic way, certainly is one side of it. The second side is, as a coach, this is a monetization strategy. If you have healthy athletes that show up and are adhering to the plan and look great on stage, guess what, guys? You're just going to see dollar bills because people are going to want to work with you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You're ahead above the others, and so that's the other side of it, is that it is. It's something that the investment of continuous learning. Right. You look at how we leverage the Advices Radio Network. It is. It's a learning platform.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things where I think it gives you the ability to, like you said, even manage your own personal change and cross it over into your own personal boundaries. Right. How do you manage and grow and become the person that you always want to be? Because, you know, my best friend and I were just talking about this last night when he and I were on the phone, and it's the joy is in the journey. And so this just facilitates the joy that much more, even in the dark times.
Yeah, no question. All right, Kate. Well, thank you very much for being with us. Guys, for another episode of Advices Radio with Kate DeNunzio from The Art of Progress, we will see you soon. Thanks, Kate.
Thanks.